Only one that hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Gregory Stockel tells us how COVID-19 is changing internships. Susan Shand brings us a story about the tensions of wearing face masks in some U.S. cities. Armin Kasabian will bring us words in their stories. He will talk about some common sports idioms. Finally, our show will end with The Making of a Nation, our ongoing U.S. history program. Today, Jonathan Evans and Ashley Thompson will bring us that story. But first, the education report.
An internship is a way for many students to explore different careers and gain valuable skills during their education. It is a work position for a short period of time and could be paid or unpaid. More importantly, students who had work internships received more job offers after graduation than those without. During the COVID-19 health crisis, almost all internships have had to adjust to the new environment. Some workplaces have simply canceled their internships. Others moved them online for work and learning. The Ohio State University, or OSU, is the largest public university in Ohio with nearly 68,000 students. Around 75% of students will do an internship while they are in school. OSU offers a competitive internship program for students studying government policy. The internship program is called the Washington Academic Internship Program, or WAIP. The program helps its students to study and work in Washington, D.C. Like many others, the program had to move to a virtual learning environment this year. This fall, only 11 students are attending the program. Alyssa Fuller, Nicholas Fulton, and Claire Palmer are three students attending the WAIP program this fall. Fulton joins the program from Kent, and Fuller checks in from another Ohio city, Columbus. And Palmer is nearly 4,000 kilometers across the country in Sacramento, California. Alyssa Fuller had to adjust to the feeling of being alone and disconnected during the internship. One of the biggest ways that COVID-19 has changed our daily lives is the way we communicate. Nicholas Fulton told VOA that he had to adjust to communicating through email and phone calls every day. He He said it is difficult to get his personality across to his supervisors and build relationships. Since many internships are unpaid, students will often take a paying job during their internship. Interns find it important to balance their time. I'm Greg Stockel.
Susan Shand brings us our next story.
Around the United States, arguments over mask requirements and other coronavirus-related restrictions have turned ugly. The deadly virus is spreading to small cities that once seemed safe from an outbreak. Some Americans, however, have not accepted the need to wear a mask. In Boise, Idaho, public health officials were planning to vote on a mask requirement measure, but they had to quickly end their meeting because of fears for their safety. Anti-mask protesters had gathered outside the building and even at the homes of officials. One health board member cried as she announced she had to go home to be with her child because of the protesters. They were outside her home playing a recording of gunfire. "I am sad. I am tired. I fear that, in my choosing to hold public office, my family has too often paid the price," said Ada County Commissioner Diana Lachiando. Boise police said they arrested three protesters at her home. In South Dakota, the mayor of Rapid City said city council officials were threatened over plans for a citywide mask requirement. The law did not pass. Hospitals across the state are filled with COVID-19 patients. The United States recorded over 3,000 deaths on December 9th, reported the COVID Tracking Project. That marked a single-day record. New cases each day have risen to an average of more than 200,000. The number of patients hospitalized with COVID-19 reached nearly 105,000 on December 8th, an all-time high. At the same time, protesters in Montana's Gallatin County have gathered for 2 weeks outside the home of County Health Officer Matt Kelly. The protesters are against new requirements, including a statewide requirement to wear a mask. They have carried signs reading, "We refuse to be your experiment." Last week, around 80 people lined Bozeman's main street to support Kelly and other health officials. In the American state of Missouri, Greene County officials recorded 51 COVID-19 deaths in the first 8 days of December. Hospitals are full, and hundreds of healthcare workers are quarantined. The area's two major hospitals asked the city of Springfield to renew the city's mask requirement before it ends in January. Neither the state nor the county has a mask requirement. The state of South Dakota has suffered through the country's worst rate of COVID-19 deaths over the last week. But Governor Kristi Noem has continued to refuse to require masks or to use other strong measures to slow the infection's spread. Hospitals in South Dakota are in crisis, and patients are being flown out of the state to get treatment. Dr. Stephen Niebuhr works in the biggest hospital system in the area. He said that trying to tell people they must wear masks has been a frustrating process. He said, "I still see people out here that will tell me they don't believe it's any worse than a common cold." I'm Susan Shand.
Now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Sports are a great source of enjoyment and competition for people around the world. There are many expressions related to sports in English that we use in our daily lives. In the United States, the most popular sports include baseball and American football. So, terms and sayings connected to those games are especially common. We often use sports-related terms in our daily lives to describe moments of success, difficulty, failure, and fairness. Timothy Wall teaches English as a second language to adults in Los Angeles, California. He also wrote the book Footballogy, Elements of American Football for Non-Native Speakers of English. Wall says using sports idioms is a great way to sound more like a native speaker and better understand a new culture. Knowing how to use American sports idioms can help people from different cultures make personal connections in a foreign place. Here are a few expressions to practice. Let's consider the phrasal verb huddle up. The verb huddle means to crowd together. In American football, the offensive team huddles throughout the game to discuss its plan of play. The team forms a sort of circle with their backs to everyone else. This helps keep the players' brief meeting private. They do not want the opposition to learn what moves they are planning to make. Apparently, the football huddle began at Gallaudet University, a university for students who have hearing disabilities. The players use sign language, speaking through signs they make with their hands. So the Gallaudet players faced each other so the other team could not see their hands. Here are two example sentences of the phrase used outside of football.
The students huddled up around the chemistry teacher as she performed the experiment. The patient's doctor and family huddled up to discuss possible treatments.
One of the most common American football idioms is a Hail Mary. Hail Mary is the name of a Christian prayer. It is used in football to describe a play made by the losing team toward the end of the game. The play is not likely to be successful, but is made in desperation.
The prisoner hid under a car in a Hail Mary effort to escape police.
The idiom drop the ball most often describes a situation where someone failed to do something important or necessary. This term is used in many sports. A baseball, football, or basketball player can drop the ball, usually resulting in some kind of loss or penalty for their team. In non-sports talk, you might say you dropped the ball if you did not finish your schoolwork on time, or forgot to pay the electric company, or did not follow your supervisor's orders for a project at work. Listen to this short discussion as an example.
Sorry, I'm late for work. I had to walk because there was no gas in the car. John was supposed to take it to the fuel station.
Wow, didn't you also tell me that he left your phone outside in the rain yesterday?
Yep, he has really been dropping the ball lately. And only I seem to suffer the results.
I'm Armin Kasabian.
And now we present The Making of a Nation. The American nation began to expand west during the middle 1800s. People settled in the great open areas of the Dakotas, Utah, Wyoming, and California. The movement forced the nation to deal with great tribes of Native American Indians. The Indians had lived in the Western territories for hundreds of years. Settlers and cattle ranchers pushed the Indians out of their homelands. The result was a series of wars between the tribes and the federal government.
At first, the United States government had just one policy to deal with the Indians. It was brutal. Whenever settlers wanted Indian land, the tribes were pushed farther west. If the Indians protested or tried to defend their land, they were destroyed with crushing force. By the middle 1800s, almost all the eastern Indians had been moved west of the Mississippi River. They were given land in Indian Territory in what is now the state of Oklahoma. The government described these Indians as civilized. This meant they were too weak to cause more trouble. Many agreed to follow the ways of the United States government.
The Indians of the Western Grasslands were different. They refused to give up their way of life. These Plains Indians were always on the move because they hunted buffalo, the American bison. They followed great groups of the animals across the grassy plains. At that time, there were millions of these animals in the American West. The Indians of the plains depended on the buffalo for almost everything they needed. Many of them were fierce fighters. The Plains Indians did not want settlers crossing their hunting lands. They often tried to destroy the wagon trains carrying settlers to California and Oregon.
The United States Army was given the job of keeping peace. Soldiers were sent to build roads and forts in the Western Plains. They tried to protect the wagon trains from Indian attacks. They tried to keep settlers from invading Indian lands. There were many fights between the soldiers and the Plains Indians. The soldiers had more powerful weapons. They usually won.
Some Plains Indians tried to live peacefully with the settlers. One such group was part of the Sioux tribe, called Santee Sioux. It was the largest and most powerful group in the West. The Santee Sioux lived along the northeastern edge of the Great Plains in what is now the state of Minnesota. They signed treaties with the government, giving up 90% of their land. The Santee agreed to live in a small area. In exchange, the United States agreed to make yearly payments to the tribe. This made it possible for the Indians to buy food and other things from traders.
Trouble started, however, in the summer of 1862. The government was late giving the Indians their yearly payment. As a result, the Indians lacked the money to buy food. Traders refused to give the Indians credit to buy food. One trader said, "If they are hungry, let them eat grass." The Indians were hungry. Soon, their hunger turned to anger. Finally, the local Indian chief called his men together. He gave the orders for war. Early the next morning, the tribe attacked the trading stores. Many of the traders were killed, including the man who had insulted the Indians. He was found with his mouth filled with grass. The governor of Minnesota sent a force of state soldiers to stop the Indian revolt. The soldiers had artillery. They killed several hundred Indians in battle. They hanged several others. Soon the revolt was over.
Trouble came next to parts of Colorado and Wyoming. This is where the Sioux Indians and the Cheyenne Indians lived. The chief of the Lakota Sioux tribe was named Red Cloud. The Indians fought bitterly to keep settlers out of their hunting grounds. After 2 years of fighting, with many deaths on both sides, the government decided the struggle was too costly. It asked for peace. The Sioux and the Cheyenne agreed. They were given a large area of land north of Wyoming in the Dakota Territory. They also were given the right to use their old hunting lands farther north. The government agreed to close a road used by settlers to cross the hunting grounds, and all soldiers were withdrawn from Sioux country.
The war ended, and peace came to the Sioux and the Cheyenne. With peace came a new United States policy towards Indians of the West. The government decided to put aside an area of land for each tribe. The land was called a reservation. Each tribe would live on its own reservation. Most of the reservations were in Indian Territory in what is now the state of Oklahoma. Other reservations were in Dakota, near the land of the Sioux.
The government believed it would cost less money and fewer lives to keep Indians on reservations. The Indians would be away from possible trouble with settlers. Instead of moving freely over the plains to hunt buffalo, the Indians would live in one place. They would receive food and money from the government. Officials came from Washington to explain this new policy to the Indians. A big meeting was held. Chiefs representing many tribes attended. The chiefs spoke, one after another, to the government officials.
All of the chiefs said they, too, wished to live in peace with the United States government. But many questioned the decision to move to reservations. One who did so was Chief Ten Bears of the Comanche tribe. He said, "There are things which you have said to me that I do not like. You said you wanted to put us on a reservation. You said you would build houses for us. I do not want your houses. I was born on the plains where the wind blows free and there is nothing to break the light of the sun. I was born where everything breathed a free breath. I want to die there, not within walls."
So the government and the Indians reached a compromise. The tribes were given reservations in Indian territory, but they were also given permission to hunt buffalo in a wide area south of the reservations. The Indians agreed to give up all their old lands. They agreed to live in peace on the reservations. In exchange, the United States promised to give the Indians all the food, clothing, and other things they needed. It also promised to give them schools and medical care.
The Indians were not happy with this agreement. They did not want to give up their old ways of living. However, they saw they had no choice. The government was too strong. They waited weeks, then months, for help to move to the new reservations. They could not understand the delay in carrying out the agreement. The delay was in Washington, D.C. Congress could not agree on how much money to spend on the Indians. So the lawmakers refused to approve the agreement. They left the situation unsettled. Again, Indians were forced to watch angrily as settlers began moving on to lands they had agreed to give up. As the settlers moved in, the buffalo and other animals left. The Indians had difficulty finding food.
Soldiers shared their food with the Indians. It was not enough. Western officials sent urgent messages to Washington asking for supplies for the Indians. No supplies could be sent until Congress approved the money to buy them. As before, some of the Indians became angry and refused to wait any longer. Their anger led to new fighting. In the end, it was a fight that failed to win back their land.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.